Hello, my name is Motoroyo and you're listening to the Life in Brown podcast. Today's episode is with Philip Onotu, who completed an MBA program at MIT's Sloan School of Management. He's currently a consultant at Boston Consulting Group. He completed his MBA in 2021, and in this episode, we talk about why he chose to do an MBA, his process for selecting what schools to apply to, and he also shares some tips to help with the application process. We talk about how to fund an MBA program because it can be very expensive, and he shares his advice when searching for scholarships and funding for your programs. And we also get into how to make the most of your time during an MBA, and he shares whether the MBA program has helped him in terms of his career prospects and just in general as an individual. We get into whether doing the degree was worth it or not. Philip was a great person to speak to, and he shared a lot of gems in this episode, and I'm sure you're going to learn a lot from him. If you're curious about the MBA process or you're considering doing an MBA, this is a great episode to listen to. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Philip and you learn a lot from it, because I definitely did. Here's my conversation with Philip Onotu. I wanted us to start by asking, I know you have an engineering background, but what made you want to do an MBA?
Yeah, you're right. I do have an engineering background. My undergrad was in electrical engineering. And after I graduated, I went to go work for an automotive company. And I was doing control systems engineering. And I did that for 6 years. I did a full career there. But I'd always known that I was interested in not so much business, but in how decisions are made. And that's what drew me to the MBA in general, was because I felt like the decision makers were always on the business side of any company or industry. And in undergrad, I actually considered doing a dual major, engineering and an undergrad in business administration. But I remember my advisor at the time, because my undergrad, you're these advisors that worked with you on your class schedule and all of that. My advisor at the time was man, this is just going to add time to your course, and it's not going to really help your job prospects. I wasn't going to be able to get a job, on the business side of things with a minor in business administration. It's just focus on engineering, and if you want, you can do an MBA after. And so since then, it had been in the back of my mind. And I think what really pushed me to do it at the time that I did was, at my job, I was at a point where over the 6 years, I think in the last 3 years of it, we had been working on one particular project, first of its kind in the country. And it finally was coming to an end. And I was this feels a good stopping point. I feel I've accomplished something here. This was a good time to go do the MBA. And I remember something particular reminded me of it. We were working on this project, and typically these projects would take 2 years. Think of a project that usually takes 2 years. And they pushed us to get it done in 6 months. So we're working crazy hours just to get this done. These were engines that we were working on. And the idea was, they had thought that they were going to sell, let's say 30,000 of them in Europe or something like that. And then after we were done in 6 months and crunch, they only sold 500. And I remember I went to my boss. I was dudes, we said we're going to sell 20,000 of these. We worked so hard. Now only 500 have been sold. And he was yeah, I don't know what happened. And I talked to his boss's boss, and he was yeah, I don't know what happened. And what that reminded me of was yes, the people on the engineering side, we're not really making these decisions. We're just sort of executing on what we're told. And I was all right, okay. In addition to okay, I've accomplished something here. And this reminder that if I continue on this path, you could eventually end up as a decision maker, but your chances are sort of not as high. I was all right, this is time to to stop and go do this.
I know you said you already had an interest in business from undergrad. When you were then thinking, okay, I'm going to go and do an MBA, but there are many schools that offer this program. So what did you consider when you were applying and looking at different schools?
So I'll give you the structured, what I think you should consider in general. And then obviously some of the things that were like important for me personally. So I actually looked at a couple of different options when I started to think about it. The starting point was, do I want to go part-time or full-time? The part-time programs were, at least in the United States, were a little longer, mostly 3 years. And you would either do it like in the evening or on the weekends. At the time, I mean, like online classes are more popular now, but at the time at like really good schools, they didn't really have a lot of online classes. So if you're doing a part-time program, you're sort of limited to what was in your immediate surrounding at the, like the schools that are in your immediate surrounding at the time. And the advantage of a part-time program is that, you know, you get to keep on working. It sort of like reduces the financial burden of getting an MBA. So I strongly considered that. The other route is obviously going full-time, which is what I did. When you go full-time, go from, you know, some income to zero income, you've got this MBA fee. So like definitely the more expensive route, but also the route that feels like you can truly immerse yourself in the experience. And then if you're looking to switch industries, it's easier if you go full-time because then you can recruit for like all different industries. Versus if you go part-time, people typically use the part-time program to accelerate their careers within their own industry versus completely switching industries. So those are like two big like considerations for me. I was like, do I go part-time? Do I go full-time? Obviously, you have to think about where you are. Like, do you feel like if you go full-time, you're going to have like the financial support to get through this? Do you have a family right now that you need to support? Like at that time, I didn't have a family or anything. So like, it was like, okay, if I need to, you know, crash on the floor, like, you know, whatever way I need to rugged this, we're going to get it done. And then, so that's like one set of criteria is like part-time or full-time. And then the second thing is, okay, what school do I want to go to? I think partly just being Nigerian and wanting to achieve, I set my aim pretty high. Two was also thinking about the return on investment. The way I saw it was like, if I'm going to do this, I want to go to a really good school so that whatever I'm going to pay for this ends up yielding a return. I don't think you have to go to a top, top program if all you want to do with your MBA is transition within your company, right? Or show that you've got this management experience and you want to use that to become a manager. I don't think you need to spend the money for a top, top program if that's your goal. I think I was looking to completely switch industries, to try different things, to maybe try a startup. So I was looking for this network that could support like this ambition that I had, which was why I felt like I needed to go to, at the time what you said was like a top 10 MBA program in the US. I briefly considered Europe because the programs are shorter. So the full-time programs in the US are typically 2 years. In Europe, you can find programs as short as 12 to like maybe 15 or 16 months. So I considered that because I was like, oh, it'll be shorter. It might be cheaper. But I was living at the US. I was living in the US at the time, and I was more familiar with the education system. My friends and support network were in this country, and I was like, let me just stay the course and stick with the programs here. So that's how I thought about like my prioritization of schools. I was like, what do I want to accomplish with this MBA? What schools are going to let me accomplish that? And then can I do it part-time or do I need to go full-time? Was sort of like that was my decision tree at the time.
So when you decided that you were going to like look at US schools, like you narrowed it down. So what was the application process like?
Oh God. The application process is something else. All right. So like I narrowed it down to the US, and then the next thing was selecting schools to apply to, because like, I actually don't think you can put in a quality application to like 10 schools. It's too much time and effort. You're most likely doing this while you're working as well. So it was like, how do I narrow the schools that I want to go to? And so I went and I visited a couple of these different schools, like met the students. And I was like, where do I feel most comfortable? Where do I feel like I'm going to have like a support system? And I narrowed down to 3 schools. So I only applied to 3 schools. And I didn't apply to, you know, like, you know what people sometimes term as a safety school, meaning like you have like the 3 schools that you're really interested in, and then you have one that you sort of apply to just in case. And the reason I didn't apply to a safety school was because if I didn't get into the schools I wanted, I told myself I wasn't going to go. So like, I didn't want to have like this like fifth option that might not be what I truly want, but then I'll just go do it because like that's where I got in.
You said you applied to three schools. So what three schools did you apply to?
Okay, yeah. So I applied to HBS, so Harvard Business School. I applied to MIT, so the MIT Sloan School of Management. And then I applied to the University of Chicago. And like those were the three schools that I was like, I was completely happy going to any of them. Right. Now, there were obviously like other great schools that I didn't apply to. Like I didn't apply to Wharton. I didn't apply to Stanford GSB. There were other great schools that I didn't apply to. And like the reason I didn't apply was because like when I was prioritizing, when I visited these places, I don't know, I just felt more camaraderie with the people at the three schools that I applied to. So like that was sort of like my thinking. And like it sort of like aligned with what I wanted to do going forward, which was like experiment a little bit with startups, and Stanford would have been great for that as well. But like at some point in time, you need to narrow it down. And like, I was like, all right, these are my like top three. And then if I don't get in, we'll see what happens after that. So those are my three schools. The general structure of the application for like MBA schools is you need a GMAT or a GRE. Some schools are starting to give waivers. Very, very, very few people got them when I was applying. I think like post-pandemic or during the pandemic, like some people started to get more waivers because they couldn't get into test centers or anything. But like bank on having to take the GMAT or the GRE. My advice is to do that first. The GMAT is, for example, is valid for 5 years. So even before, like, you know, if you're thinking about going to an MBA program in like 2 years or in 3 years, you could take the GMAT when you feel like you have the most time to like study and get through. And then that way, you have that done and it's sort of like off your plate. You have the score. You don't need to worry about it anymore. It also gives you opportunity if you feel like you need to take it again. If you do it early enough, you can take it as many times as you need to feel like you get the score that you want versus the crunch time of trying to do it just before your application. So you've got the GMAT score and that's like something to the GMAT or GRE score and that's something to the side. And then there's always some sort of essay for every school. And like what was tough was that the essay topics were very different for each school and they all required you to sort of like reflect on your journey so far, reflect on where you wanted to go. And you would pour so much into these essays because outside of the GMAT score, you felt like the essay was the only chance you had to tell your story as to like why you deserve to be in this class, why you thought you deserve this spot. That takes like the most like iteration and time to work through. And what was really helpful is, you know, finding when you visit schools, talking with students, making some connections and then having them review your essays ahead of applications was like super helpful in terms of feeling confident that what you're producing is sort of like in line with what like the school might expect. Cause like all these schools have such like different cultures and different expectations and you're trying to like make sure you hone in on all of that. So GMAT essay, two longest pieces. Now, the other things you would submit, you submit a resume to every school because like most MBA programs require to have had some sort of working experience before joining. So you submit your resume and then you would do letters of recommendation. And the letters of recommendation, some people try to index on, oh, the senior vice president in my company is writing me a letter of recommendation. What I found was that having someone who's really worked with you, knows and can give examples of how you're great at this and how you're great at that was so much more powerful than having someone who was in senior leadership that was not as familiar with the work you were doing, write your letter of recommendations. And then depending on the schools, like they would have like, they might have some like little questions or additional requirements. So for example, like MIT Sloan at the time had a 60-second video requirement where you were supposed to just like introduce yourself to your classmates. And those like bits are usually an opportunity to tell them something about yourself outside of what is in your essay and on your resume. Like, for example, I mean, you know, me and Ore played football.
I have to say that Ore is my brother. So like for the podcast, because people may not know that. People may not know that you like football. Yes. And you play a lot with my brother.
Yeah, so we played football. So yeah, so for my essay, all I did was talk about like the fact that outside of work, I like to play football, and like, you know, I acted like I was introducing myself to my classmates. Like, if anybody's down, hit me up. Let's go. So it's a little less formal at that step. It's just talking about yourself. And like, that's like, those are like core pieces of every application. It's just that for each one, the prompt for the essay could be different. And then you just like, you read your essay so many times and go over it again and again and again and again, that it really does take a lot out of you, which is why I think like it will be difficult to like try to do too many applications at one time.
But because you said like there's a video essay, so there are no interviews, like at least for the schools you applied to.
Oh, there are. Yeah. So that's like step two. And I guess we'll go through like, we'll go through the full journey. So obviously like the first stage is putting those applications in, and then you just sort of wait. You wait, and the next step is they let you know if you get invited for an interview. So like that's like the first hurdle is like, okay, am I even going to get an interview? Am I going to get an opportunity to tell my story? Yeah. And then if you do get invited for an interview, you would typically be invited on campus and you would go interview. And then again, the interviews will also differ from school to school. So some schools in their interviews are fully focused on just the, what I would say is the behavioral aspect. So, oh, no, tell me about a time when you had to, I hate that question, but overcome adversity. Oh, okay. Tell me about a time when you had to be innovative, where you had to like go against the grain. So like some schools are entirely focused on like that behavioral aspect. Some schools might be looking to test your industry expertise. They might ask you questions about, oh, what are like the top 5 players like in your industry, or like what are the things that matter for success in your current industry? And like the schools that do that because the MBA is a very unique program in the sense that like it's one of the few programs where your classmates come from all walks of life. If I think about my core group, which is like a group of people that you sort of work through your assignments with and like discussions with in like your first year, like if I think of my core group of like 6 to 7 people at the time, I had an engineering background. We had someone who was an architect. We had someone who had come from consulting. We had someone who had come from finance. And we had someone who had come from a family-run business. So there's people from all these different walks of life. So in interviews, they're testing your industry expertise. What they're trying to do is when they're building a class, they're trying to build a class of people that know their industry. Because a lot of time, we learn as much from our classmates as we do from like the professors. Like the classes are very discussion focused and blah, blah, blah. So they're looking for you to bring the expertise of your industry in. So that's step two, is like you go, you get an interview, you do the interview, and then you wait again. And then you finally, after the interview or after some time after the interview, you can either get accepted or you can get waitlisted. Getting waitlisted is obviously one of the most painful things because you're like, you're so close, but now you're on the waitlist. And I think there's some strategies that people have for getting up off the waitlist, which is like keeping the school updated, you know, telling them, you know, if things have changed with work, if you're doing something new and blah, 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 blah. But like sometimes people might be waitlisted at one school, but get accepted to other schools and then might just make that decision, or might let the school that's waitlisted know that, hey, listen, I got admitted to this school. Like, does that like... like, I need to make a decision. So, like, that's, like, the journey. And that each step is, like getting, like, the email for the interview is, like, huge. You're, like, excited. And then as soon as the excitement fades, you're, like, oh, wait. But, like, this interview doesn't mean I'm in. Like, it means I'm super close. But it doesn't mean I'm in. And then once you're done with the interview, I remember I was, like, all right, I've done my best. It's sort of left in God's hands now. And we'll see how it goes. And then, obviously, there's, like, a sense of euphoria when you do get in, and then all your friends that like supported you through the study sessions and everything are like so excited for you. And then you have to think about the money part.
Yeah, I was going to go that way, like next, like the money part, like how you're going to pay for it. But I just said, oh, like finish with the application, and then, you know, one thing after the other.
Yep.
Yeah. So like, but before we get to the money bit, so I know you applied to 3 schools.
Yeah.
So when, what correct. Then I know you ended up going to MIT to Sloan. So how
correct
what was the deciding factor? Was it the acceptances or was it you choosing? Yeah. How did you decide?
Exactly. So for me, so when I applied, I didn't get into HBS. The booth application cycle was actually coming later. Or I was going to apply to booth like in the second. So like you can apply first round and you can apply second round. So I did HBS and Sloan in first round, which like the first round deadlines are around November, December-ish. And then the second round deadlines are sometime in the fall, so like March-ish. So I didn't get into HBS and then I got into Sloan. I had already prepped my entire application for booth. As soon as I got into Sloan, like I was so excited. I was like, I think this is where I want to go, that I didn't even bother like continuing like with like booth. So I accepted Sloan sort of on the spot.
Okay.
I was like, yes. And that's because like I got my HBS rejection before I got my Sloan application. So feeling pretty low. And then the Sloan acceptance comes through, or the MIT Sloan acceptance comes through, and I was thank God.
Okay, so like now you've gotten the acceptance, and then so the next bit is like, how are you going to pay for it? So what was like your plan in terms of funding the degree?
Yeah, I'll be honest, like, and a lot of people will say this, at the time you're applying, everybody's like, don't worry about the money, apply, get into the schools that you can get into, and then we'll figure out the money afterwards. So very soon after I got my acceptance, like, you know, like a week after, I was like, okay, I now actually have to figure out how to pay for this. And I'll talk through like what the general options are, and then I'll talk through what my path was. You know, if your parents are able to like support you through the program, fantastic. For the 2 years, a lot of these programs, at least the US top programs, are roughly like $200,000. So like it's not a little sum.
I thought it was like, I actually Googled it. I was like, how much is, I think I went on the MIT one. I was like, I know it started from around 80. Well, that was just the tuition. Yeah. But go on. Yeah.
Exactly. So like tuition for 1 year would be roughly like 70 to 80,000. And then if you think about living expenses and blah, 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 that's probably another like living expenses and accommodation. Boston for HBS and MIT is a very expensive place to live. So like all of that would roughly come to about 100,000 for your first year. And then across 2 years, it would be roughly like 200,000, like a sort of like a number to like plan towards. Obviously, if you have parents that can support you, that's fantastic. But like not a lot of people are in that situation. There are scholarships available like through the school that you apply to. And then obviously there are lots of scholarships like just in the general education ethos for like different things that you can look into depending on like what your background is, what you've done and all of that. And then obviously the final option is loans. So like lots of people take student loans to sort of like go to the MBA program. And like a lot of people justify it as in terms of, you know, your income or your earning potential is relatively high afterwards. And most people would talk to alums about, you know, did they take a loan? How much of a loan did they take? And how long did it take them to pay that off? Just to sort of get a good sense that, okay, if I do take a loan, I'm not going to be in debt for like the rest of my life after doing this. For me, my approach was, okay, luckily I got a scholarship from Sloan at the time for part of my tuition. So like you said, my tuition was, I think, roughly 78,000 or so per year at the time. And I got a scholarship for 50,000 per year at the time. So like that was also like huge news. I was like, okay, 50 grand of the 78,000 is going to be like sort of like taken care of like by the school, which is like super helpful. And I think like what goes into getting like that sort of scholarship from the school is, like, I don't truly know. Like, it sort of feels like a back book. So like, it's like Sloan was merit-based, meaning like they would look at your resume and what you've done and what they think you could bring to the class and all of that, and sort of determining like what scholarship you get. The one thing I will say is if you have scholarships from multiple schools, you can definitely negotiate and say, hey, I really love your program, but this school is offering me this much more money. And like the worst thing they'll say is, no, we're not increasing the money. But like some people never ask. So like if you have multiple scholarships, you should definitely like leverage that and ask. Some other schools have need-based scholarships. So Sloan was entirely merit-based, and some schools have need-based. And that might be like a factor in when you're deciding what schools to offer. So I had a pretty big scholarship, and then that was helpful. And then I was on the hook for like the rest of it. I was pretty averse to like student loans, mainly because I didn't have to take them in undergrad because my parents supported me through undergrad. I wasn't going to go back to my parents for like the MBA program because I felt like this was something that I was doing that I should do on my own. So at first I was pretty like averse to like taking a student loan. So I literally went on a scholarship application binge. We'll just Google every scholarship possible. There's this app called Scully. I think where you can put in your profile, where you've worked and blah, 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 and it'll try to like find scholarships for you. There were some like wild ones like, oh, write an essay about, I don't know, marketing. Like there were just all these like different things and I was applying and applying and applying and applying. And honestly, none of them were coming through for me. There was one I was pretty excited about. It's a scholarship for, they call it like first gen Americans. So it's basically people who are either children of immigrants or immigrants themselves, but are now like U.S. permanent residents or something like that. But like, it was like, it's such a tough scholarship to like achieve. Like I was looking at like the profiles of like the people that got like, it's like, oh, PhD in biology and something else, stem cell research. I was like, all right, I guess it's not happening. But I mean, I applied anyway. So I applied to a bunch of scholarships. They didn't all work out, but that's something to do. I applied to some like Nigerian specific ones. I think there was like a T.Y. Bello fellowship, which is like a Nigerian specific one. Unfortunately, they didn't get that either. So like getting towards like the school time, I was like, man, this is getting tough. So this is what I decided to do, right? I was like, okay, I think it's getting to a point that I understand that I might have to take a student loan. But my question now was, how can I be smartest about taking a student? And so what I did was, and this is not financial advice, disclaimer, I'm not a financial advisor. But what I decided to do was, okay, I went into my savings. I was like, let's take it a semester at a time. So for like the audience, if you're not familiar with the U.S. education system, but like at least at MIT Sloan, it was the 2 years were divided into two semesters each. So total, you had four semesters at the program. And so, and you only had to pay tuition for one semester at a time. So you didn't have to pay the entire year upfront. And so what I said was, okay, for the first semester, I will go into my savings because I'd been working for like 6 years at this point in time. So I had some savings. Let me go into my savings for the first semester to pay the rest of my tuition. So that's what I did. Was first semester, I went into savings to pay the rest of my tuition. While I was in school, my scholarship hunts did not stop. So that's one thing I would say is just never give up on the scholarship hunts because it's free money. It's free money. So my scholarship didn't stop. My scholarship hunt didn't stop. I was like, all right, let me keep going because I don't have a student loan yet. I need to figure this out. The other thing I will mention about MBA programs is, like, not only do you have these like huge tuition bill and you have like living expenses and blah, 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 half of the MBA program is like traveling. So you have no income. You are now traveling more often, like Mexico City, trip here and there. Yeah, I feel like you have a question about that.
Yeah, I do. I have one question is, what are the trips for? Because I didn't know that there's a lot of traveling. So maybe I'll start with that and have another question.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll take a detour into this and we'll go back into the financial discussion because I think at least like in US programs, right? Like a big part of the MBA is building your network. So a lot of your classmates have got, you know, similar ambition to you. Your alumni network is pretty strong. And so people really, when they come to the MBA program, focus on how can I build connections? How can I build true connections with people? And that's one piece. Also, some people also come to an MBA program because they're trying to take a break from just like the work life. They're trying to take a break, take a little mini vacation while also obviously getting a pretty good education. And so what that means is one of the quickest ways to like bond with people is actually to travel with them and like live in the same Airbnb or whatever. Like, you have to plan it together. while you're there, you can have these one-on-one moments and like actually have like discussions with people, learn more about them. And so I think over time, what that has created is like this culture in MBA programs where like every break or something, people get together in a group and they travel somewhere and they go and they experience the world. And some programs have that like built in. Like at MIT, we had like Global Ventures, which was when you would basically consult for a company in an emerging market for like the entire semester. And then in December to January, you would go to that country and go work in that company for like those 3 weeks. And you would go with your team that you've been working with the entire time. So like some programs have like travel built into the program, but then there's also just a lot of recreational travel. Like even before I started, the people in the year above organized a pre-trip with like 12 people from my class. And we went to Cabo and like you get to meet your classmates and you get to know them. So like, it's something if you're interested in an MBA, especially like a US MBA, people know about that, like that is the culture before and people are excited about that. And then as soon as you get in, there's all that energy. And like one thing I liked as soon as like people try to like have different options. So like if you wanted to do the big international trip, you could do that. But also just like taking a drive up to like New Hampshire or Maine will accomplish the same thing of being in the house with your classmates and like having like those conversations and building those connections. So yeah, there's a lot of travel. Like everybody in my school was like, are you in school or are you traveling? So yeah, there's definitely that focus. Yeah. So that's like another thing that's like a financial like drain as you're going through this program. Anyway, so first I was like, let me reach into savings. I'll pay for like the restitution with savings and like pay like my rent and all of that with savings. And then as I was approaching my second semester, I was like, okay, I'm definitely going to need to take a loan for my second semester. And so what I did was I took a loan only for the rest of my tuition, because you can take a loan for living expenses as well. But I wanted to like take as small a loan as possible. So I took a loan only for the rest of my tuition. I think it was about $17,000. And I was like, okay, all right, at least we get tuition paid for this second semester. We'll keep figuring it out as we go. So like, anyways, like I said, my scholarship hunt didn't stop. At Sloan, there was this pretty cool scholarship that they had, but they only had it for second years. In your second year, you could get a scholarship. I think it was roughly $25,000 per semester. And like the criteria for the scholarship was that in your first year, you had to be in the top 10% of your class by grade. You also had to have like contributed to like the Sloan community and all of that in your time there. So I had my eye on that scholarship. And like another thing that happens in the MBA program is like there's a focus on like discussions and personal development. There's less a focus on grades. Like it's not about like, oh, are you going to get an A or a B in this class? It's really about, did you learn something in this class? Did you critically think about this problem? Did you grow as a person? There's a lot of like personal development, leadership classes, but you still get grades. But people sometimes don't really focus on their grades for that reason. And some people can afford to, like, but I was like, I need these grades. Partly again is like the Nigerian part of me, but partly because I was like, I need to apply for this scholarship. So I need to be in top 10%. So I really focused on that. And then luckily in my summer, like while I was doing my summer internship, which is another piece as well, is you can factor in, okay, I might get a pretty good summer internship and I can use some of that money to pay for my tuition or like pay for my living expenses. But like, luckily while I was doing my summer internship, I got the news that I received that scholarship and I was like, ah, okay, perfect. So now tuition for second year is covered. Now all I need to do is like my living expenses, the trips I want to go on. How do I like do that? So the other thing I did was apply to be a teaching assistant. I think I was a teaching assistant for econ because like I enjoyed it as a first year. So basically it's a class you took in your first year and then in your second year you can be a TA for the class and you get paid for it. And like it's not very hard, honestly. Like you grade some tests. I think the assignments, we didn't even grade as the assignments in that particular class. And then you lead what we call a recitation, which is just like a 1 hour session each week where students can come and ask you questions and all of that. And I mean like the salary was like pretty decent to like get me through just like food and all that. So scholarship second year, TA second year was how like I sort of like paid for like the rest of like my MBA. And so for that reason, I ended up coming out of school having only taken that loan that I took for like the second semester. But that's like a unique journey, or a journey that's unique to me. Like some people might not be as lucky to have gotten like the first scholarship, which was like 50 grand. Like that was like huge, like 50 grand per year. So that's like 100,000 total. That was huge for me. But I would say, I think the advice holds true that, you know, apply first. And then after you apply, you can figure out the money thing. I know I have classmates that just like took a loan for the entire thing, and that's doable as well. The finance journey is a very personal journey. So it can look very different for different people. But I think applying and then talking to different people about how they figured it out, and I hope my journey helps someone think about how they could like strategize, even though mine was very much like, yeah, you have to be okay not knowing what's going to happen the next semester. But yeah, that was my sort of like journey on that front.
No, it's interesting like to see how you paid for it, because I'm sure everybody has different. Some people might be their family, scholarships, loans. So it was good to like how you approached it was interesting. But then the thing you mentioned before that I wanted to go back, you said that you did an internship in the middle. So this is between your first year and your second year of your MBA. So like, where did you work? What did you do?
Okay, awesome. So I did my internship at the same firm that I now work at. So I work at the Boston Consulting Group. And I did my internship at the Boston Consulting Group as well. And BCG is a management consulting firm, meaning our primary role is to help business leaders solve problems. You know, senior leaders in a business, they've got some problem. Maybe they're not growing as fast. Maybe they're not being as profitable as they want to be. They could bring in management consultants to sort of like look at the problem from a different perspective, bring in the expertise that we have. And like that was like super interesting to me, because I'd been an engineer in my career before. So I'd worked in one industry the entire time. Consulting allowed me, I was curious about other industries. Consulting could allow me to do one project in healthcare and then do a project in automotive and then do a project in finance. And I was like, wow, I could learn so much. I was super curious. I guess I am still super curious. And so that was why I went that route. And I recruited for that in my first year. So by January, I knew like what my summer was going to be like. So like I knew what my summer internship was going to be. So I did that that summer, and then I signed on to come full time the next year. But I also did a startup as well, like while I was in school. I worked on a healthcare startup that me and two other classmates started, and it was focused on how do you prevent opioid addiction. It was a super like fun experience, and I would encourage anyone that's going to an MBA program, like it's the one period in your life where you're going to have 2 years to try as many things as you can. So I encourage people to heavily lean into the experience. I did it because I wanted the startup experience. I was interested in healthcare at the time because I thought it was like a good way to like impact people. Yeah, so it was focused on preventing opiate addiction. We started with thinking about a pill bottle, and then we found out that people were more interested in like an application. We shut it down towards graduation because what we found was that the US healthcare system was more set up for treatment than prevention. So if you're treating opiate addiction, there was very clear sort of like pathway for who's going to pay for it, insurance would pay for it, versus if you're trying to prevent a particular illness, insurance wasn't clear that it was them that needed to pay for it. The opiate manufacturers weren't clear. So we decided that we didn't have a clear path for like who's going to fund this. So we shut it down at the time. We might pick it up in the future. But like beyond whether or not you continue with a startup, like it was a great experience to like see what it is to go through and try to build something from the ground up. How do you find the contacts to help you? That was a fantastic experience that I did like in parallel, and then like did my summer internship, and then I came back full time afterwards.
So you did a lot of things. You applied for scholarships. You were a teaching assistant.
Yep.
You've traveled a lot. So what I want to ask, my question is, like your MBA program sounds, and I know you did it in the middle of, you didn't travel as much, I think, during the pandemic, because I know part of it was.
Yeah, during the second half of, yeah. Exactly. Most of it was in like my first semester, and then like my last semester, which was like when we're vaccinated.
Yeah, when the world is open, you know. So yeah, I just thought I would say that. Yeah. You weren't traveling during the pandemic.
Yeah.
But
We were home.
What I want to ask is, like, for someone who is maybe thinking about doing an MBA, what would you suggest in terms of making the most of the person's time during that? I know you also did. You're also like a student body co-president, because I saw that on your LinkedIn. So I know you did that as well. So I want to ask, like, what would be your advice to someone in terms of making the most of their time?
So my advice would be, you know, in the period where you're applying, like I said, those essays, you have to do a lot of self-reflection about what it is you want to accomplish. I would encourage, like, writing that down before you get to the MBA program, because when you get to the MBA program, there is so much that you're going to be exposed to. And I'm not saying you should definitely lean into those things, but make sure that in addition to leaning into new things, that you're accomplishing the things that you had set out for yourself before coming to the MBA program. Now, how much you lean into is very much dependent on your personality and energy levels. As you can tell, I was involved in a lot. So people typically say you can, like, in your MBA program, you can have a social life, good grades, or lots of sleep. You can have two out of those three. I definitely indexed on the good grades and the social life aspect of it. I didn't really care that much about sleep at the time. And so that could drive, like, your engagement. And what I would like to say ahead of this is, like, I don't think you have to do the MBA program the way I did it for it to be fulfilling. I think, like, people find fulfillment in the MBA programs regardless of, like, how much they get involved with. But a couple of things that I think are pretty key. I think, like, it's important to find one club or one community or one cause that you're going to dedicate, I would say, 40% of your non-academic energy to. It's like, maybe it's a conference that you want to plan. Like, something that you feel like you can own is going to be yours. So for me, like, it was like running for, like, student body president and, like, doing that and, like, feeling like I was improving the experience for my classmates. For some other people, it was maybe, like, planning our Africa Innovate conference, right? Like, how do you bring all these experts and things and people from all across the continent to Boston and run this amazing conference and create this great contacts? Some people is, like, running a particular club. So I think, like, it's important to find, like, at least one extracurricular activity that you're passionate about, that you're going to feel like you can dedicate and build a community around. That's, like, I think one of those is critical. Some people do two or three of those and don't really see, but, like, I think that's important. Two, I think building some connections. I don't think you need to get to know everybody in your class, but part of why you come to the MBA program is to build a network. So, like, a lot of people had this thing where they're like, okay, I want to know 20 people just, like, in general that I might invite to my, I don't know, whenever I move afterwards, I might invite them to, like, my house for dinner or something like that. But maybe I want 5 people out of this program that are going to be really core friends, where we're going to be friends for life. Like, some people have, like, goals. Like, so, like, just making sure you put yourself out there a little bit in terms of, like, getting to know other people and figuring out who your tribe is going to be or can be within the program. And then afterwards, I think is super huge. And then three is just, like, really exploring yourself, challenging your hobbies. Like, I took, like, swimming classes. I tried to learn how to sail. I was never confident to do it by myself, but, like, I tried to learn how to sail. So, like, just, like, trying things that you wouldn't have the time to do while you're working. Like, while you're working, you can't just in the middle of a Wednesday afternoon go say you want to try this, right? This is one of the few times, like, in your adult life that you're going to have, like, this, like, freedom to, like, experience certain. So, like, trying a lot of different things. Like, I did a startup because I wanted to try a startup. You don't have to try a startup, but, like, if you want to, this is the time to try it. Don't worry about whether or not it's going to be successful and blah, blah, blah. Like, this is the time to try it. While you're a student, lots of people are willing to help you. You can even find funding if you, like, you know, like, you can win a competition here and, like, a pitch competition here and there, $5,000, $10,000 to help you build a startup. So, like, those would be, like, my three things is, like, find a core extracurricular activity, find your people, and really push yourself. A lot of people use the term growth mindset, which is you've got the things, the ring that you're comfortable with, and then there's the stuff that's just outside of your comfort zone. And if there's any time I think to push into that, I think the NBA experience is like a time to push into that. I don't think travel is like critical to a great NBA experience. If you love traveling, you might as well. It is one of the times where you're going to be with people from different countries. And so it's a cool thing to travel to a new country. It's even cooler when you travel there with someone who's from that country, because they can show you the ropes. You can live like a local if that's like interesting to you. But I don't think it's like critical to like feeling fulfilled at the end of an NBA program.
So like you've mentioned like how like about making the most of it and like meeting new people and all of that. So how do you think it has, like, what impact do you, now that you've finished the program, it's been over a year now.
Yep.
Looking back, what do you feel, what impact do you think it has made on your career, like financially or in other aspects?
Absolutely. I mean, we can start with financially because like that's like the easy one. Like, so like, obviously, like, tremendous impact financially, like, on my career. Like, if I think of, you know, they track your metrics, like, pre-MBA and post-MBA salary. Like, so, if I think, like, pre-MBA, post-MBA salary, like, what is it? It's, like, 2.3x or something like that, right? Pre-MBA to post-MBA. So, within 2 years. But if you're a rock star, you, like, you can, like, maybe move a couple of different jobs and grow your salary 2.3x in 2 years. But I didn't really see a path for me to do that. So, like, financially, yeah, tremendous impact. But I think personally is where I felt the most impact and growth. So the first thing is I definitely grew as a person and a leader in the MBA program. Like, now, part of it was just like the MBA program. Part of it was because I was doing student body leadership during the pandemic. You can imagine people had lots of different problems. People had lots of different struggles. And like, I felt like I became a more empathetic person. I became a better listener. I became better understanding of how people's experiences can be so different from my own and how you need to hold space and time for other people's experiences. And that was like, just like part of like that leadership aspect, but it was also part of like what you learn in the MBA program, which is like you essentially, if you think about the case method, which is how a lot of your classes are, which is you read a story about a protagonist that had to make some decision. So a lot of the time you're having to put yourself in someone else's shoes. You're having to put yourself in someone else's environment and think about, oh, this is what they were facing here and there and there. And so like, I feel like personally, like that meant a lot of like growth in how I think about myself in relation to other people and how that comes and how I think about leadership. Not necessarily in the formal sense that, oh, you're a manager and blah, blah, blah. But like, even like in a group of friends, like how can you softly influence and things like that. So all of that was like personally super impactful for me. And then being in a space in the United States with like people from all over the world, it reminds you, like we obviously are always there, but it reminds you how big the world is. And like, you can live in a city, in a very diverse city with people from different places, people from all over the world, but like, they're not necessarily, you're not necessarily having conversations with them. You're not going to like their houses for dinner. You're not experiencing their food and culture and blah, blah, blah. It's like you live in a diverse city, but like you're sort of just like living your life. I think in the MBA program, like being in contact with people from so many different cultures and like participating in their culture to the extent that it was appropriate was just like really cool. Everyone has got their own sort of like perspective on life. And like, it's important that we respect all of that. And like, all of that just like adds to like your continuous growth as a person, I think, and how you like go about life. So that's like financial, personal. And then the last part I think is like, as you get into like becoming an alum, then you really start to see some of the secondary benefits of an MBA program in the sense that like all of a sudden there's like these job opportunities that you didn't even know existed. You have like this alumni network that you can call on. If you're interested in particular things, you can reach out to them. And like, they're always sort of like willing to like help and encourage and guide. Even when I was doing the startup, a lot of the people we reached out to understand, oh, how the healthcare system works and this and that. They were all alums that I called. So like, that's like the other part is like you sort of like become part of like this network of people that you can like reach out to and call on. And like, I don't know if it's right that the world works that way, but like, there's definitely a lot of new doors that open just by being you know, affiliated with particular programs, for example.
And I have one final question, and that would be,
yeah,
so would you say that doing an MBA was worth it for you or not?
Oh, for me, it was absolutely worth it, like 100%.
I think,
yeah.
No, you were going to expand on that.
Yeah. So like it was 100% worth it for me, because I think for a couple of reasons. One, obviously we had the financial impact. We had the personal, like I've got lots of friends from my MBA programs that are going to be my close friends for like a long, long time. I have a bunch of weddings to attend next year. I need to figure out how I'm going to do all of that. The friends I created, obviously the financial impact I had on my career. And then we talked about how I financed my MBA. The fact that I didn't have to outlay so much money upfront made it a totally worthwhile experience. And I think I know people who had to pay a lot of money and would still say it was a worthwhile experience. But I think before you make the decision, you really need to think about what you want to get out of it so you don't get to the end of it regretting that experience.
Yeah. No, I think you've shared a lot, and it's made me think even myself, like, because sometimes when I do this podcast, I'm like, oh yeah, then I want to do this and then I want to do that. So like, yeah, it's been really, really good to like hear your experience and how it has shaped your career, because there were things I didn't even know about. You know, I knew it wasn't like a normal degree, but I didn't know how different it was from other degrees. So it's been good to like hear your thoughts and your experience as well, and how you got funding for it, because it just seemed, I'm sure now you're telling the story, it sounds like a short story, but I'm sure it was a long, tedious journey.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, I mean there were lots of nights just like googling whatever, you know, there were lots of rejections, there were lots of scholarships that didn't work out, but like it was one of those things that just made part of my routine. Like I could be like watching Netflix, but I just have my laptop on my lap, just checking out what scholarships are available here and there. I think just in general, I think it was an amazing experience for me. I think it's been an amazing experience for a lot of people, but it's such a personal journey that I would always encourage that people really take the time to reflect, but then also like reach out to people in your network who have done it and hear their perspective, hear their journeys, which would be very different from my journey. And then if you do all of that and you decide it's for you, then just like go for it. There's so many people I know that like don't even apply because they think it might not like work out for them. I don't know. My thought is the worst case is no. And maybe I've just heard a lot of no's and I'm like, yeah, sure, no, up to the next one. But like that's the worst that could happen.
Well, thank you, Nimisi. You shared a lot, and I'm sure it'll be helpful to anyone who listens to this, like as a good reference. And it's been good to hear your story. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This was fantastic. Enjoyed the conversation. Everybody, like and subscribe, you know?
Yes, they need to do that.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with Philip. If you've listened this far, please do share a screenshot of this podcast on Instagram stories and tag me at Life in Brown Pod. I really love to know who's listening, and also it helps more people discover this podcast. So thank you for listening, and don't forget to follow the podcast so you never miss an episode.